Welcome to the special edition of the Rudin Report podcast. I'm Dave Rudin, and we've got a special FCAC preview edition for you. The tournament begins on Saturday, the boys and the girls tournaments, and we're going to break them down for you today. And then joining me in a little bit is going to be Fairfield Ward guard Ryan Golbin, who unfortunately learned yesterday that she is going to be out for the postseason with a torn ACL and MCL. She's a strong player of the year candidate on the girls' side, so we'll talk to her a little bit. But we're going to start out with the boys, and last night was the final one of the regular season, and probably apropos of the way these past couple of months have gone, we've got the number 8 seed, and this wasn't determined until the very last game of the year, the number 8 seed with a losing record, lost last night, sort of backed in to fill out the draw, and probably the way this year's gone, that's the way it should be. We also had the much-anticipated 1-versus-2 game, which didn't have any effect on the standings, but as we'll discuss, maybe offered a little foreshadowing into what we can expect over the next week. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mike Walsh. Mike, how you doing?
Good, Dave. And I think you said it correctly. This is a kind of a year where anything can happen. And it did happen last night where a team didn't have to win to get in. They actually lost and lucked into the 8th seed with a 7-8 record, under 500. And that's the way the FCAC has gone this year. So it was kind of apropos.
I kind of felt like you yesterday. I got to last day of the regular season, and unless I really have to go out somewhere, I like to monitor everything from home. So I actually had four different games up on my computer. Four of the ones that were pivotal to the season and the drawings. And I want to get to one of those games in particular. But first, let's just go over the draw for everybody in case you haven't seen it. The quarterfinals are going to be held Saturday at Fairfield Ward, and they're going to go 12-2-4-6 in order. The first game is going to be the 3-6 game with Ludlow, the third seed, playing number 6, New Canaan. Then we're going to have the number 2 Staples will be facing number 7, Wilton. And then we go to the later session, and we get to see the 4-5 game, and I don't know that you could get much more even than Greenwich and Fairfield Ward. And then finishing up, we'll have the number 1 seed, Ridgefield, playing the 8th seed, Stanford, and Stanford's the team that lost late to St. Joseph. But then Brian McMahon at the very end had almost an impossible 3-point shot from behind half court to try to tie against Greenwich, and it fell short, and that cost the Senators a spot in the playoffs. Mike, I guess I didn't think we would necessarily start here, and I was focused more on the games between teams that needed to get in, but there's a lot to break down with the Ridgefield and Staples game. Earlier in the day, and we're going to talk a lot to boys and girls because injuries this year and yesterday, I've never seen anything like this where the possible or strong candidates for male and female player of the year hours apart found out that they have season-ending injuries, which is just kind of crushing. And Staples is one of those teams. They found out that Sam Klatko, their top scorer, is going to be done for the season. His wrist injury turned out to be broken, and we wish Sam a speedy recovery. And then what happened? Staples goes out to Ridgefield and beats them 81-69 and denies the Tigers undefeated league record. And I want to go because the stats are kind of incredible. But what are your thoughts there? I don't know that many people thought Staples would win the game, especially coming off the news.
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't think they could beat Richfield at Richfield. But the one thing that some people forget, and I think we talked earlier in the year about this, Staples plays really, really good defense. And I thought that was a key to the game last night. They kind of bottled up the offense of Richfield. And they also hit the boards, which is obviously part of a defense. And I think they out-rebounded Richfield last night. And the second, the third thing was that they shot the ball very well. I mean, Udall, who is their engine, he had 11 assists, and I think five of them went, or six of them maybe, went to Lohman, who hit 6 out of 10 threes. When you start shooting the ball like that, and, you know, you can beat anybody. And I thought that was really key. Richfield had trouble stopping them. Andrew actually went to a 2-3 zone at times. He tried a 1-2-2 half-court press. He tried everything, but, you know, Staples had the answers. And they got balanced scoring, which, you know, when you have a Sam Klasko, you look to him as your number one option. But last night they were able to get, I think, four or five kids in double figures. And, you know, that was the key. It was surprising to me because I thought Richfield might be a little bit better defensively. But kudos to Staples for, you know, coming out and playing a game like that. And I think it also added to the excitement of the tournament.
Yeah, it, first of all, I don't know that I saw defense get shredded more than Staples, what Staples did last night. They shot 62% from the field. They were 18 for 24 from two-point range, and they were just under 50%, 11 for 23 from three-point range. And the key, they had 29 field goals, and we've seen this a lot from them. They had 22 assists. They had 22 assists, and Ridgefield had 5 assists in the game. You look at, and we'll get Udell, and I want to talk a little bit about his role going forward. But as you mentioned, he had 11 assists. But I think this is going to come down. Staples' success the rest of the way is going to be, can they make up for Klacko's scoring? And it doesn't have to be one player. And you look last night, Mason Tobias scored 21 points. He had 19 the other day. He's really been stepping up his game offensively, and that's made a big difference. And then Dylan Lohman had 20 points. And Matt Corrigan, and I don't know if this was a season high for him, but he shot a lot more than usual. And again, if they can get, I don't know that you'll get him shooting 8 for 10 from the field and scoring 19 a game, but you look at Corrigan and Tobias and Lohman, and they were a combined 23 for 31 from the field. That's just an incredible stat. You look at Ridgefield's numbers. They shot 48% from the field. I think they would take that, though they struggled from three-point range. And they had four guys in double figures, too. And as we've seen, Ridgefield's at its best when they get balanced scoring. But like I said, their defense, we're going to find out whether it's last night was a little bit of an aberration. I don't think anybody's going to do to them what Staples did. I don't know that Staples could recreate that, but I want to discuss a couple of things. First of all, let's go from the Staples standpoint. And once the word got out that Sam was going to be out for the year, I had a couple people say, well, Udell really has to step up his game now. And I disagree with that. Udell's playing at such a high level right now. I don't know where you ask him to step up his game anymore. And they don't need him even to score. They need him to, they need his assist totals to be high. And if you're going to have 11 assists out of him, he's doing his job. I think it's really going to be how these other guys, you know, whether some combination with Tobias, Lohman, Corrigan, I don't know. We don't know yet the status of of Bowman yet. He's uncertain. But, you know, if they could get some points out of him and higher last night, he had seven assists also. All those assists had to come from someplace. He had 7 points, seven assists. Last night, Staples did what they're going to have to do to win the tournament. They're going to get a high-level Udell, and they're going to have other guys contribute and make up Klacko's points. You see that?
Well, let me tell you something. I think if they shoot like that, they're going to win the tournament. But it's a kind of hard thing to do to shoot like they shot last night. But the defense is going to carry. And you mentioned everything about Udall and the assists. But he's a great defensive player, too. I mean, I thought he did a nice job on the defensive end, too. And that kind of he leads the defense for Staples. And you start putting that together with their shooting ability. You know, I tell you what, they could win the whole thing. But on the flip side of things, Richfield, I think, learned an awful lot last night.
Let's get to Richfield in a second. I want to break it down by team, and let's just finish on Staples, and then we can go to Richfield. And you touched on a point I wanted to make. Number one, Staples doesn't have to shoot like they did last night. That's asking too much of Staples to shoot like that. For three games, they just have to get score. They have to shoot well, and they have to get scoring from other guys. They have to make up Klacko's points somewhere. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you've got to shoot 62% from the field. But the point you made, and it makes a bigger difference, I think, this year than it does in past, is Staples wins a lot of its games on the defensive end. They can have an off night shooting. And they play such good defense that I think this year defense is going to be a big equalizer for them in the tournament and could end up being the deciding factor for them.
Defense wins championships. We used to have that on our practice jerseys, and it's certainly true. And I think that Staples has that opportunity this year in the FCAC.
So I think that's As we break down Staples and look forward, again, I think we saw their path to winning this without Klacko last night is to get balanced scoring, to have Udell, who does everything. He's probably the most versatile player in the league. And he, ironically, he was 2-for-8 from the field. So he's one of the few people who didn't shoot well, but they don't need him to score. He had 10 points and they need him to, you know, to keep putting up his 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 points. They need him to end up with a lot of assists. And if they do that, that means that other guys were scoring. From the Richfield point of view, and you tell me this, some people may not agree. I actually think it helps them that they lost the game. Number one, it takes off the pressure of being undefeated. And number two, you know, it would have been a significant accomplishment to go undefeated, but maybe it's a little bit of a reminder for these guys that as many close games as they've escaped with this year, they're still beatable. And the fact that they got a taste of what losing's like right on the eve of the playoffs, maybe that's a good thing for them. I don't know if you agree or disagree on that one.
Well, I have to say this. I think that the big thing that came out of that game is that Richfield learned what they have to do to try and beat Staples. They saw that what they were doing wasn't working, and they're going to have to make some adjustments to stop the other scorers, Tobias and Lohman. And I'm sure that Andrew will be able to come up with some kind of plan. But I think that the fact that they learned a lot from that game, I mean, the loss, obviously, is one thing, but it didn't mean as much as what they learned from that game and how they can adjust to it going forward if they should meet in the finals. But, you know, this year, let's see if they do both teams get to the finals, because you never know. I mean, it's one of those things that this year has been upsets and parity and, you know, I think everybody thinks that Richfield's going to play Staples in the finals, but that may or may not happen.
Yeah, I don't know. And Staples has had Ridgefield's number the last 5 years. The Ridgefield's lost 6 games in the league, and 4 of them it's to Staples. So that's been, and Staples has knocked them out of the playoffs and in the semifinals the last 2 years. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic. Let's bounce around a little bit. Ridgefield has Stanford, and I shouldn't say it this way because I was kind of hoping McMahon would beat Greenwich, not because I didn't want Stanford to get in. I just wanted the 8th seed to actually win the game to get in. So that was the only reason. You know, I think we all agree that Stanford has top 8 talent, but they've really struggled and kind of limping a little bit to the home stretch. And they almost beat Ridgefield right before New Year's. I just think this is going to be a tough game for Stanford.
Well, when they played them, it was at Stanford High, and I don't think that Alex Hickey played for Ridgefield that, and I think Ridgefield had one other injury. I don't see that as being a close game, to be totally honest with you. I think that Ridgefield will make adjustments from that early December game, and I think they'll win. Stanford, when you really look at Stanford, it's kind of amazing. They won over Norwalk with a last second shot, 2 seconds. They beat Ward with 2 seconds. They could easily have only 4 or 5 wins, but in this league they have 7, and even though they lost, they are playing Ridgefield, the number 1 seed. But I don't give them much of a chance, to be totally honest with you. It's just it's Ridgefield's better team.
And then we go 2-7 with Staples. Staples has Wilton, and the Warriors are an interesting team. They got hot. They looked like they're on the ropes, and they were taking punches, and they were one punch away from getting knocked out. And they got off those ropes and regrouped. They finished strong with 3 of their last 4, and the game they lost was last week against Ludlow, which was at the buzzer. Ryan Lucetta and Charlie Roy have really picked up their game. I thought Wilton was going to be a team you didn't want to meet in terms of being one of the lower seeds. Do they have enough to beat Staples?
Well, I think Joel reinvented his team in the middle of the season when he lost Matt Weiss as his point guard. And he rediscovered his old 3-2 zone. And that 3-2 zone has been very, very effective for him. Whether it will be effective against Staples is another thing. I think the thing that you have to give Wilton a lot of credit, though. I mean, they were out of it. Nobody counted them even making the playoffs. And then the push that they made to become the 7th seed was quite a job by Joel and his kids. And they're playing Staples. Now, Staples has to be aware that, come down off the big high of beating Ridgefield and get ready to play they're tough kids on Wilton. And, they know what's at stake. I think that the difference in the game will be Staples' defense. I think Staples defensively, could give Wilton a lot of trouble in scoring. Although their 3-2 zone has allowed them to get out on a fast break and, hit some threes. And they're going to have to shoot the ball real well to beat Staples. But again, the way that they've played, anything can happen. But I got to give Staples the big advantage because of their defense.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to, I'm sure Staples with their defense contain Lucetta and Roy, and that means is somebody else, somebody like a McKiernan or some of these other guys that have been giving Wilton good minutes. Can somebody else step up? And again, you talked about Wilton's 3-2, and that means again, how will Staples shoot from the outside? And do they get? I think Lohman's going to be a real key player because he can be so explosive, and he's the one that you kind of figure can, you know, can make up the most of the missing points. Yeah, he's a little bit on the streaky side. If you get the really hot Lohman for three games, I think he's going to be one of the key players in the tournament. But I kind of agree with you. I like Staples still. I don't know, other than the 1-8 game, that I would be totally shocked in terms of if any of the lower seeds were to win, because, and maybe we'll pick at the end who we think's going to win, because I let's put it this way, I still haven't decided. I've got like about 10 more minutes or however much longer we're talking to decide, because I look at each team and I say this team could easily get beat, and then I look at the rest of the field and then I say why not. So why don't we go in order with the higher seed and go to the 3-6 game, and this will the noon game is always the hardest game to play. Fortunately for Fairfield Ludlow, they have a short ride to the Ward Gym, but Ludlow's been the last 2 or 3 weeks has been one of the most consistent teams. They've been a slayer to all these teams that came in and were in the middle of the hunt for playoff spots. They probably ended up dealing Trumbull their death blow. They almost put Wilton in a lot of trouble. Wilton had to get 2 wins this week to get in, and they're playing a New Canaan team that we've sort of, yeah, they've just been swimming upstream pretty steadily. I'm tired of beating up on the football player angle, but they're playing a lot better. The football player's gotten the basketball shape. Henry Chandra has really stepped up and been playing well. I know Esposito had a big game last night in their win over Danbury. We've been real high on Ludlow. Ludlow is not lost to a team that is seated below it. Their losses are to the top two. Well, I'm sorry. They jump Fairfield Ward, so their losses are to the 1-2 and the 4 seeds. Do you see New Canaan having a chance against Ludlow?
Well, I really do. I think that New Canaan seems to be able to play everybody close at that level. They've won the games they had to win to get into the tournament. When they played Ludlow the first game, they got behind early. I mean, it was
I think that was the game. Like it was 17-0, or it was something nothing. I forget what it was.
Right, exactly. And I think that they learned from that, and it's all going to depend on if they can score against Ludlow's defense, which I think has been pretty good all year long. You talk about the games that they just won; they played really good defense. He's not afraid to adjust either. You may see the zone out of him once in a while to change the pace of a game. And man-to-man and he's pretty big. He's got decent size, which I think New Canaan has too. So yeah, it's going to be a battle. That's going to be a close game. And I think that, whoever shoots the ball better is going to win. And I think that Ludlow has a little bit of an edge, especially if Mahoney is healthy. Now, he hasn't played well. Or in the last couple of games, he's been out, I think. And if he's back and he's able to give him some offense, along with a couple of the other kids that have stepped up while he was out, I think Ludlow wins. But it's going to be a close game, and I wouldn't be surprised if New Canaan upset them. And it's not an upset, because there are no upsets in the FCAC.
And the one thing that's really helped Ludlow a lot, and I saw them on Monday night against Trumbull, is they're starting to get more balanced scoring now. It's not all Torello. They got Stabellini and a couple of other guys have really been stepping up. And if those guys that have gotten hot can give them, 8, 10, 12 points a game each, that's a different Ludlow team than the one that we've seen for most of the year. I like Ludlow too, just because they've been beating these other teams. But again, I think this game will probably be in the 40s or 50s, and that definitely plays to New Canaan's favor if that's the case. And then probably you know, a 4-5 game is ostensibly going to be the closest game. And Greenwich and Fairfield Ward, you know, Greenwich leapfrogged Fairfield Ward from 5-4. Not that it really makes a big difference, other than Cardinals have sort of been a sleeper team for us, and they're the only team that I haven't seen yet. It's just I always have one team by quirk of schedule that I miss, and I really want to see Greenwich, so I'm glad I'm finally going to get to do that on Saturday. But they got to play in Ward's gym. They're the higher seeded team, and they got to play at Ward's gym, and I think that that certainly, if there's a betting line, that tilts the odds a few points in Ward's favor.
Well, let me say this. They played at Greenwich, I think, on Monday night, and Greenwich held on by a point to beat Ward. And in that game, to me, the key is for Ward is Jack Kramer. And he had foul trouble, missed most of the second quarter, and, you know, came back, and it was pretty even both ways. But I think that Kramer, if he has the game he's capable of having, is going to give Greenwich a lot of trouble. Even though Greenwich does have a big, but, I don't know if he can handle Kramer. On the flips and the two shooters that they have, Shea and Connor, and they're on their home court, or Moore, rather. They're on their home court. And I think that's a big, big advantage. So, like you say, if there was a betting line, it'd have to go to Ward. But talking about Greenwich, I mean, they really have come on. I think they've won maybe 9 out of the last 12 games or something like that. And I think Coach Murphy helping Coach Brem really created a winning culture over at Greenwich High School. And the key to them, obviously, is the guard, Maloney. He's a really good player, Division III player, and he can shoot it, he can pass it. But he's been getting help from some others. And, it's going to be a tough job to beat Ward at Ward. But I think Greenwich can do it, to be honest with you. It's going to be a good game, one I'm looking forward to see.
Yeah, I agree. Maloney's been playing as well. Maloney's been one of the most consistent players the second half of the season. And you know, Greenwich is a team that I could see winning two games. It'd be tough to win a Ward. They almost beat Ridgefield at Ridgefield. They had the ball for with the chance to win the game, and then got caught with a traveling that was induced by the Ridgefield defense. But I think Greenwich is capable. I also think Ward is capable of winning two games as well. You know, offensively, they've been tough. They're gonna, if they could play the same kind of defense they played against Ludlow, against any team really, with their having three offensive weapons, they're going to be dangerous. So this is going to be it's going to be an interesting game. And you know, I thought about this a little bit. I was up at Ward Tuesday. I'm going to do a story on Jack Kramer for part of my preview package. And I thought about this once I got into the gym, and I asked, yeah, how many times has he been in double figures? How many times has he been 20 points or more? You can make a strong case for Kramer for player of the year. And ironically, one coach that I spoke to yesesterday, I was in touch with a bunch texting and looking for scores and stuff. But there's one, I know Kramer's getting at least one vote. And, we keep saying Kramer's on the periphery, Kramer's on the periphery. Kramer's probably been the most consistent player from beginning of all the scorers from beginning to end of the season.
Well, I mean, obviously I'm not taking anything away from Jack Kramer, but there are, several others. Obviously, Sam Klasko got hurt. You would have counted on him. Sean Wilson, if he had more of a supporting cast, I would think would be a candidate. It's kind of early for it's going to be a debate as to who's player of the year.
Well, they vote beforehand, so the playoffs don't have any effect on who gets
it.
Right? It actually really doesn't. It's not a big deal, other than I don't think there's a clear-cut favorite. I think you can argue. I think each coach, when they get in front of the other coaches, there's three or four that are going to have a strong case to be made. But it was more just a pro Jack Kramer statement and how well he's played and how consistent he's been.
No question. And Ward seems to come up with those type players. As you know, our favorite guy from last year, who's now up at Union, the same similar type player, actually. Both valuable to Kramer. I forget the name off the top of my head.
Oh, wait, you forgot with Jack Plesser's name?
I didn't forget Jack Plesser's name.
You know what? It's funny, and this is a good point, because we ran out of time when we were talking to Joel about kids going to play in college, and I really, I didn't know where I was going to make this point, but it's important to say, is if you're playing Division III basketball, you're a really, really good player. Yeah, I think too many times you look at people look at Division I in terms of a measuring stick, whether you're an elite player or not. And, you know, you've seen it with a bunch of you had for as many guys that, you had that went on and played at UConn or Duke or at a high level. You had so many others as well that played at the Division III level. And I thought about that because that's one of my biggest pet peeves as a sports writer, is when people make it sound like Division I is the measuring stick for whether you're good or not. And I went, and I'm a Union grad as well, and I went and looked at Plesser's statistics, and he's averaging 17 points and 6 rebounds a game. You know, sometimes a lot of these kids go Division I, and it's kind of status, and they sit on the bench, and you look at a kid like Plesser. Plesser was the FCAC Player of the Year, and he's one of the top players in the Liberty League right now. He's getting the play. He's getting the star, and I just thought that we ran out of time. I wanted to make that point in last Sunday's show that Division I is not the measuring stick on whether you're a good player or not. If you're playing college ball, you're a good player.
Well, absolutely not, and, to be honest with you, not only are you getting the playing time and having fun and playing basketball at Division III level, it's tough to play at Division III. I have two kids that used to play for me are at Gettysburg College, which is, I think, ranked in the top 25 of Division III right now. And they're both getting a great education. They're going to graduate, and they're both playing basketball and having fun. Another kid, Andrew St. Louis, is at Manhattanville. He's a leading scorer from Manhattanville. And, in his senior year, and he's got a lot of opportunities. So they're getting an education, playing basketball, and having fun. Division I, you can go to Division I school and sit on a bench for 4 years not get the opportunities to play and maybe not enjoy it as much. But that's a great point you make. Everybody's enthralled with playing Division I. Division III is really good basketball, and even Division II is good basketball.
Any division, if you're playing college ball, you're a good player. And a lot of these top athletes here are going. Many of the ones who go D3 are going to these New England schools where they're getting a really good education as well, and it sets them up for life. And they get to have a true student athlete. I hate the term student athlete because it's kind of become antiquated, but with NIL and everything. But I just thought that was an important point to make. But I want to talk before we talk for a couple of minutes and give the girls a little bit of attention too. Let's pick a winner. I know who I think I'm going to pick, and it's, you go first.
Okay, well, I know who I'm picking because
I think I knew too.
I'm going with Richfield, and it's nothing against the rest of the teams in the playoffs, but Andrew has been there before. does a great coaching job as far as adjusting to the game strategies. Not that the other coaches don't, but he has a little more material, and that he has Peter Stanislavski inside, who I think is going to be key. He has Hickey as his leader, and he has two or three other kids that can put the ball in the basket. He has probably four kids that can put a ball in the basket in double figures. But he's got the inside guy, and I think that's going to be the key. Now, the caveat to that is they're going to have to play better defense than they played last night. And I'm sure that they're going to make adjustments to do that. A tepid vote for Richfield on my part.
Yeah, mine's tepid, too. You know what? And this is kind of rolling the dice. I'm going with Staples. Number one, I think this is the year where defense could win you a championship. Number two, I just have a funny feeling. They've come so close to winning before, and everybody just said they're done with Al Klacko. And wouldn't it be ironic to lose your top scorer, top player, and then end up still winning what's been an elusive championship for them? We're going over 60 years back, and I just have a funny feeling Lohman's gonna have his breakout moment in the tournament, and they've had Ridgefield's number. If it gets to be a 1-2 game, and I think Ridgefield would love last night's game meant nothing. It didn't change anything. I'm sure. I think it's perfect for Drew to kind of in the locker room. Bulletin board, we can't beat, everyone says we can't beat Staples. They just shredded us. What better way to answer than to, if we get them in the final? And you know who, we talk about how all the parity this year. Is there, I don't know that we should include, unless you want a Fairfield Ward, is there a 6, 7, or 8 seed that you could see winning two games?
A 6, 7, or 8 seed, I don't think so. I think a 4 or 5 could do it.
I think a 4 or 5 could do it also.
I think if Greenwich gets by Ward, they have a chance to beat Richfield and get to the finals. Now, that's a big if, because, if the game was being played on a neutral court, I think that Greenwich would have a better opportunity. But the fact that it's a home court for Ward. Now, can Ward win a couple of games to get to the finals? Not impossible, as you say, with Kramer and the two guards, Moore and Shea. I think that it's possible. But that's what, it makes it exciting. And because all the strange things that have happened this year, it may end up being a strange tournament. But I hope so. It's competitive. I hope that the kids play hard and the better teams win.
Yeah, for me, I could see the 4 or 5 team getting to the final. I could definitely see Greenwich or Ward winning two games. I don't know that I could see a 6, 7, 8 seed winning. I just have a tough time picking Stanford as much as they would appear to have the talent to do it. I can't see the others winning two games. It's kind of tough. But I bet you this will be the year that we're going to be wrong. Why don't we talk for a couple of minutes on the girls' basketball? And again, this is we've got a familiar number one seed and a familiar number eight seed. But just for the quarterfinals are going to be played, and I hate this year the girls and the guys are being played at the exact same time. I've always loved that I could cover the girls 1 week and then the boys the next. But for those who haven't seen, the quarterfinals are at Staples Saturday, and you got to get up early on Rudin standard time, at least, for the 11 o'clock Battle of Fairfield, Ward against Ludlow. And then the 2-7 game, Greenwich, which had a big win over Fairfield Ward to deny the Mustangs a regular season title. They're the two, and they have Trumbull. And then the 2:30 game is Staples is home and number four team against St. Joseph. They just beat the Cadets. And then Ridgefield is the one seed in the late game, and they too are playing Stanford. I know you've seen probably Stanford more than anybody, and this is a tournament where injuries have made a big factor, because Stanford's not Stanford since Jalen Presley got hurt, and Ward's not going to be Ward without Ryan Golban.
No, I agree. I've watched Stanford girls, because my good buddy Roger Fox is Caitlin Fox's captain of that team. But when they lost Jalen Presley, the team just had to readjust, and they haven't been able to do that. I think that they could have some trouble with Richfield, and poor Dave Banco with the young lady you're going to have on in a few minutes. Losing her is took away their chance to win the thing. You'd have to say Richfield, and I did watch, by the way, Richfield against the Greenwich girls. I thought that I actually couldn't believe that Richfield beat them in that situation. They were up 9, I think, with a couple minutes to go in the game, and then a girl makes a miracle shot on a bad turnover. I think if the coaches on Greenwich kind of adjust a little bit and get the ball where they have to get it to two girls inside. And this is just my opinion, and I haven't seen enough of girls basketball, but I think Greenwich has the most overall talent.
I'll tell you what, Rob Coloni, the Ridgefield girls, best coaching job by boys or girls coach this season. He's going to be a number one seed with a team whose top scorer is averaging around 10 points a game. He does it with defense. He does an unbelievable job. I'm going to have a story just on the way he scouts teams and the scouting reports that he put together. I know I sent you what he gave his girls for the Greenwich game. And I agree with you. Greenwich probably has the most talent. I would say Ward was in their class, but Ridgefield just plays really, really well as a team. It's going to be tough now for Ward. I really would have liked to have seen them with Ryan playing. Ludlow, I think, has had a disappointing regular season. I think they should be higher than a 6th seed. But if one player can get hot and carry a team in the tournament, they've got Kate Simidor, and she's been. Averaging over, I don't know what she's averaging, but she's got a bunch of games in the high 20s and 30s. And so if there's one player who could really carry a team, it's her. But there are a couple, I see her having a hard time if they ever played Ridgefield with Ridgefield's defense. And then,
Is she the 3-point shooter?
Yeah, she's averaging. I mean, she had 39 and 40, but she really takes a preponderance of the shots for them.
Well, it's anybody that can put up those kind of numbers gives your team a chance to win. And as I say, I think the girls will come down to Greenwich and probably Richfield again. And as I say, I haven't seen enough of it. But I'd have to give Greenwich the edge.
Yeah, they're not just because everybody's really been focusing on the top three teams. I don't know they're picking a number four to be a sleeper, but Staples has really come on, and they've got a lot of good young talent, and they've got Chloe Smith, the sophomore, who's really come on. So I see Staples being a sleeper. And then again, as a 6th seed, if somehow Simidor can have big games, 3 games in a row, that would give them a shot. But I don't know. I think it's going to come down to Ridgefield and Greenwich, and I hate having to pick the game. I hate picking against Rob. I just have a funny feeling if they play again, Greenwich will get enough offense to win, even though they're counting on freshmen. So I'm gonna make Greenwich my pick, but I wouldn't be surprised the way Ridgefield plays if they won it as well.
Well, I don't know as much this year about girls basketball as I probably should, but I, having coached the girls 1 year at Trinity, I really think that coaching means a lot in girls basketball, and the Dave Dankos and the Rob Colonies give your team a shot. And you know, I don't know the coach of Greenwich that well, but if she makes some adjustments and you know, is able to help her team overcome what the failures of last game when they played Ridgefield, I think they can win.
All right, well, Mike, I'm gonna let you go. We will have our normal Sunday show. This is just a bonus episode, and we'll look at the quarterfinals, and we'll look ahead to the semis and the finals. And I'll just leave you with this note too, Mike. It's off topic, but we haven't it's the end of February, and we haven't bashed our state tournament yet. But we have a week from Sunday, a special guest that anybody in the boys basketball world is going to know. But he hasn't been down this way this season. I talked to him for a little while the other day to see if he'd come on the show, and we'll talk about the tournament. But I took a quick peek for the first time, and if you were going to have the best 16 teams, I'd say 8 are in Division One right now and 8 are in Division Two, and 4 of the teams in the top 10 right now are in Division Two. So way to go, CIAC. Let's make sure we don't have a real Division One championship. But I just leave that as a parting note to talk about after we get through the FCX. But, Mike, I know you'll be watching from home. I'll be there. And thanks a lot, and we'll do this again on Sunday.
Terrific. Looking forward to it, Dave. Have a good day.
You too, and we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Ryan Goldman of the Fairfield Ward girls basketball team. Okay, we're back here, and as we finish up this special preview show, I wish I could have my guest on and talk about anything else. But it was, it was crushing news. I can't believe it happened once, let alone twice yesterday, with Player of the Year candidates finding out they're going to have season-ending injuries. And we talked a little bit about Sam Klocko at Staples. And joining me right now, she's probably, I think she's the best all-around player, girls basketball player in the league this year. And she found out yesterday that she's got a torn ACL and MCL, and she's going to miss the postseason, and that's Fairfield Ward's Ryan Goldman. Ryan, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I know everybody listening first wants to know how you're feeling and how you're doing.
It was definitely awful news yesterday. I feel a little bit better today, especially after senior night last night. It was really nice just to still be around the team and be on the bench and cheer on everyone. So just trying to keep my head up.
I mean, you've had a rough year. People may not remember that. You've been playing with a torn UCL. So your elbow,
yeah.
You've had an elbow brace. And so you've had a pretty, you haven't been 100% for a long time. And then what happened on the play? Because I'm looking at the score and wondering why you guys haven't scored much. And I texted your coach, and then he said Ryan got hurt in the second quarter. But what happened?
So, I mean, definitely we were playing Greenwich. It was a really low-scoring game in the beginning. That was when I was still playing. But then, when I obviously got hurt, I think not only, like, was it, like, a scary thing for me, but I think our team, I think it, like, threw us off a little bit. I think it just kind of put a weird mood in the air, and I think it was just, like, scary for everyone, and it was kind of, like, I know the other girls, like, felt, like, kind of weird, and obviously, like, once you take, like, even any player out, like, you kind of get rid of that, like, groove and, like, connection with each other playing, so I think it was kind of hard to adjust in that way. But we came back, we had Wilton, and we played together. Everyone was contributing, which was awesome.
So you're having surgery next week?
Yeah, I'm having it next Friday.
Okay. I mean, is there a part of you just says you're having such a great season and you have the UCL, and at the UCL, at first you didn't even know whether you're going to be able to play through that. Is there a part of you that just says, why me?
Well, yeah, definitely. But for me, when I found out about my UCL, but the doctor said I was able to play, so that was great news. But then going into the doctor's the other day, I didn't have the best hope, but I mean, I can't really do anything about it. I just have to get through it and go on to Union next year. It sucks, but it's still fun. I think our team can still go long in the FCAC, and I hope we do really good.
Yeah, that's right. We have to sing the praises of Union, since you're being interviewed by a Union grad. And we were talking on the first segment about Jack Plesser, who is also a Fairfield Ward grad. So I got to find a day next year where they're going to have a men's women's doubleheader and take a ride up there to see two of my favorite ex-Ward athletes playing. Let's just, first of all, what about, how does your team now, what does your team have to do without you to be successful?
I think definitely the rebounding, just to continue to rebound defensively. And I think that we also have, everyone has to contribute scoring. I think that some people are not as confident to go or drive to the basket, shoot. But I think yesterday it was great to see everyone contributing. And I think that just it's a little switch, like change in our like offense. But I think practicing tomorrow and today and tomorrow will definitely help. But we'll see. I don't really know. I hope everything is good, and I hope that everyone stays confident, keeps shooting, even if you miss it. Like, who cares? But I think overall, just this rebounding will definitely, someone has to step up for that, and offensively as well.
You sort of see your role now as sort of like another coach and team cheerleader, and by cheerleader I don't mean rooting for them, but sometimes you could hear it from a coach, and sometimes it means more coming from one of your teammates. If you're going to have to make up the scoring and rebounding from other people, and maybe some people who haven't done it so far. Is it just kind of making sure you help boost everybody's confidence?
Yeah, I think yesterday it definitely was like sucked to just watch and not be on the court, but I still felt like I was a part of the team, even though I was on the bench, just cheering everyone on and like trying to give anyone tips or anything, even Danko, like if I see something that I feel that in the game that has happened before, just to go and give him a suggestion if he can listen or not. But I think it definitely is helpful to have someone on the bench that is not a coach, that who's also played on the court, to like see other things that they might not see. And I'm like not as emotional and like stressed as a coach while they're coaching. So I think it's great to have someone like that too. So I still feel that I'm contributing on the team if I'm not playing.
You guys open with Fairfield Ludlow. I know that probably makes it even harder for you having to miss that. Do you think, since Ludlow's your big rival, having to play them the first game without you, is that a good thing in terms of your team's going to be motivated, but even extra motivated against a town rival? Is the fact that you draw Ludlow, does that make any kind of a difference, positively, negatively, or not at all in the first game without you?
I think it will definitely help us. I mean, we all always want to beat Ludlow no matter who's playing and who's not, from freshman and on. So I think that honestly better to have them playing first, because I think everyone is going to want to beat them, including me, obviously. So I think it's a positive thing.
Why don't you, and I'm not going to ask you to pick games because that's really unfair, but just Ridgefield's the one seed, and you had a tough game with them. I actually caught some of that game. What do you think, what's the most impressive aspect of Ridgefield's play?
Like Ridgefield's team or if we
Yeah,
play
just
them?
Ridgefield's team, the way they play. What did you find most impressive about them when you played them?
I think their defense was very good. It was definitely hard for me. Zoe was guarding me. She's a really great defender. I think also they always have energy no matter what. If they're down or they're up, they're always competing. They never, like, give up. And I think they have really good team chemistry. So I think that's what was really impressive.
What about you played part of the game against Greenwich, and then I don't know what you saw after that, but you obviously had scouted them. What do you think is most impressive about Greenwich?
I think Greenwich, they're big. They're big in size. I think that our team matched up really well with them. But I feel like that game, like, it shouldn't be, like, the way to look at, like, us playing Greenwich again, because I think next time it would be different due to the fact that it was just, like, kind of a crazy game for everyone. And I think that they also have really good team chemistry. It kind of seems like they're, like, they all know what they're doing. Like, they're very, they talk a lot. They're very communicative. And I think they're just a good team, like, overall.
Okay, sometimes it's kind of interesting to get a player's insight than from a coach. I won't ask you to do anymore, even though there are some sleeper teams in there. Well, Ryan, I'm glad I got to talk to you, and I wish I could talk to you about anything else but having to miss the rest of the season. But as you saw on social media, I think it says something about the way people look at you that I posted your photo, and you look at the comments, and the comments were coming from other teams' accounts. And I don't see that too often, so I think that's a testament to the respect you've earned during your career, and particularly this year. So I'm sorry you're not going to get to play in a Ward uniform anymore, but as with everybody else, I wish you a speedy recovery, and I look forward to you playing at Union, and thanks for taking the time here.
Thank you so much.
And that's our special edition of the Rudin Report podcast, our FCAC tournament preview. We're going to be back on Sunday with our regular show, and we'll break down all the quarterfinal action then. Enjoy the games, everybody.